I'm on a mission to help high flyers just like yourself, who until now have let the fear of public speaking hold them back from making a bigger impact. Join me as I find out the secret sauce from the world's leading speakers to make your speeches more interesting, enjoyable to give, and impactful for your audience. That's the mission, and this podcast will get you there. My name's Victor Ahipeni, and this is the Public Speaking Secrets Podcast.
Speaker Nation, what's happening? Welcome to another episode of Public Speaking Secrets. I'm your host, Victor Ahipeni, and today we've got Ryan Folan on, who is a keynote speaker who is absolutely obsessed with personal branding. I've watched a few of his talks. They're pretty humorous, but also got deep-seeding messages for helping your business. And we're going to delve into a bit of a speaking side of things and then how he's been able to leverage that and a whole lot more. So I hope you're all excited. Buckle in, because I'm going to welcome Ryan to the show.
Ahoy, it's good to be here. And I know it's secret, so I feel like we're kind of like we're cheating. We're giving the secrets away. I feel like we should be whispering or something.
we can whisper away. thanks for jumping on firstly, but can you give people, I guess, a bit of a background about, you know, your, not necessarily your journey to get to where you are, but were you always a confident public speaker? Was it something that always, you know, came naturally to you? And if it did, if it didn't, like how have you kind of progressed from there?
Yeah, so before I was a professional speaker, I like to consider myself a professional whistler, and that stopped in second grade. So I was always kind of gregarious, and I came from a family of educators, so I was very focused in school, and that pretty quickly pegged me as a nerd. So a lot of my early life was being picked on for what I thought was cool, because I was taught that school is cool. And so I found that, I kind of turned towards trying to, I guess it's classically when you don't get the attention, you might get some negative attention. And so I thought that whistling was the coolest thing. And then I got caught for whistling in class. And so I learned how to whistle through my teeth. And the teacher still knew it was me. And I thought I was being all real sneaky and everything like that. But that's a story that kind of sticks out, because I've always used my voice as a way to communicate. But when I say voice, it's more than just my voice. It's the 4,000 micro movements in my face. It's the way that I hold my body. It's the way that I'm leaning in or out. And I learned that out of necessity because I was being bullied, like physically bullied, harassed. I actually got bullied out of a school, went to another school. It got so bad, I went back to the initial school. And as a result of that, my father put me into martial arts. And it was really when I started to train in martial arts that I realized the power of your voice, which is what you look like and the way that you're breathing and the way that you hold presence. And so through martial arts, I was able to communicate without communicating. And that's really what sparked my passion for the ability to talk without talking. And so I've always been confident in communicating because I was in a position where I was like forced to basically, stand up to those people that were putting me down. And it's easy to be put down when you don't know what to say or you're shy and your body just sort of says that. And when there was a certain point where I was working in an app development company and still passionate about the bullying issue, and we developed the first ever anti-cyber bully app. And this was right when apps were starting, and it was called Word Bully. And it put a filter on different words that would come into the cell phone and trigger it and go back up to the parents. And so they could go right with the source. And so it just naturally, I wanted to speak about this. So I was speaking at high schools, I was speaking at elementary schools, and I don't think I considered myself a speaker, but the impact that I was able to have on the students and the people coming up to me afterwards and just the traction that we got, I just had this epiphany, like here I am standing up on a chair talking to hundreds of students and they heard me. And so that's when I really realized that it is my sharpest tool. And from that point forward, it's been what I lead with.
Mm. To dive into that just a little bit more, for the people who all of us out there are wanting to have a bigger impact, and I'm passionate about it being, you know, via speaking, whether that be podcasting, on stage, in front of groups. For you, was the getting up in front of these schools, was it primarily to get this app out there, or were you, charging a fee to go and speak? How were you approaching? Because I know a lot of people that I talk to, I used to run a podcast called The Youngpreneurs, and a lot of people, they want to get into schools to speak, to share this message, to have this impact. What are some of your insights on that side of things?
Well, it's not as easy to speak at schools as you would think. They have limited budget. They have limited time. All their assemblies and the amount of time that students have to be in school are all set. And what we had done is we actually had an entire bus that was wrapped, and we would drive it to these schools, and it was about, you know, the dangers of texting and driving and text bullying. And so we had a larger backing when it went to it. And we were speaking for exposure of the app and for the cause. But when I was there, I wasn't trying to get money out of it. It was literally just sharing my story. And it was kind of a default because nobody else was comfortable speaking in front of the crowd. So it happened as a default. But to speak specifically to this idea of impact, I'm kind of going to sort of spin it on its head. And I argue that nobody cares what you do. And I think that there's a huge misconception out there, right? You have impact and you want to do something. Well, nobody cares what you do. And I argue that they only care about the problem that you solve. And as soon as you flip that, things start to make sense. Because nobody wants, at a school, nobody wants you to come and talk about your talk. But if the school has a problem that you can solve, they might be interested in it. Mm. A company doesn't want to just have another speaker come and talk. But if the company has a specific problem that you've identified, and you approach them and say, I know you have a problem, I can solve that problem, it just so happens to be that I'd end up speaking, that's really where the magic happens. So my challenge to you is, if, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, forget about that for a minute and think about what it is that you're doing, what is the problem that solves. And a really fun exercise for people is answering the question that we all get asked, what do you do? And one of the most powerful things you can do when somebody asks you what you do is tell them, it's not what you do that's important. It's going to take everything within your soul to say that. But as soon as you do, it changes the conversation. They're going to look at you funny and they're going to say, excuse me? You say, it's really not what I do that's important. It's the problem that I solve. That's why I get up in the morning. That's what I'm passionate about. It's a burning in me to solve this problem. And then they're going to say, well, what's the problem that you solve? And now they're asking you for the information, and you tell them the problem without telling them what you do. And then they're going to say, well, how do you solve that problem? Then you have an opportunity to share what it is. Yeah. But you can get people interested in what you do without telling them what you do if you solely focus on the problem that you solve. So if you have an impact that you want to make, reverse engineer that and ask yourself, what is the problem that you're addressing? And if you can convince people of that, that's the quicker way to the stage. That's the quicker way in front of an audience, because nobody cares what you do. They care about the problem that you solve.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's something people don't understand in marketing in general. They talk about, I've got a PhD, or I've got this and this. And yes, there's social triggers that help once people realize you can solve their problem. But again, it doesn't matter. It's, can you solve their problem?
There's thousands and thousands of people that all look the same. Like, yeah,
exactly.
You know, I am obsessed with personal branding, and I think that's the one way to stand out. So if you want to speak at schools, right, you've got to be different. Don't look and smell like everyone else out there that's doing the exact same thing. Find something that's unique. Find something that's particular about you. What is it that makes you different? And I think there's just too many people who look the same and are creating the same messages, thinking that that's what they should do, when if you really want to make an impact, chasing after the problem that you're solving and getting creative about it, I think that's what really works.
And so predominantly we'll chat about your message and what problem you're solving. What keeps you busy throughout the day? Like, is it going into companies and consulting, or to individuals and things like that? What problem are you solving? And then from a presentation point of view, or classes or seminars or however you're doing it, how have you crafted a message? Is it a message that you can solve multiple problems with, depending on the company, or how does that kind of look? I know there's about 58 questions in there, but
yeah, no, that's good. I counted 57, so you're just So the problem that I solve is that people talk too much. They talk so much that they talk themselves out of opportunity, out of a job, out of business, out of relationships. And my solution is this methodology that I call the 313 method. And it helps people position what they do or what their idea is in three sentences, one sentence, and three words. And that's it. I think that too oftentimes people try to solve more than one problem, or they feel like having more than one solution is a better thing. Adam Grant, who's an author I respect a lot, just tweeted out the other day the importance of not giving too much information away for what you do, because it confuses people. Mm. You know, if you say that you speak on this and this and this and this and this, you're not going to look like a full solution to somebody. And for me, having a method, having this system, this 313, that is my keynote. But I can tell you how the 313 relates to a personal brand. I can tell you how the 313 relates to leadership. I can tell you how the 313 relates to sales. But I'm not out there saying I talk on sales, I talk on leadership, I talk on this. Mm. I talk about my 313. And so I find that there's a lot of opportunity to put a name on whatever it is that you're doing. If you're talking about customer service, so many people are talking about customer service. I've got a friend, Joshua, he talks about the tingly compass. What is the tingly compass? I don't know. I kind of want to know about it. Mm-hmm. It's a tingly feeling inside of you, which is your intuition. And that's how he talks about company culture and following that compass. So what is it that you're doing, and how can you package it into a way that sounds cool? Like the 313 method, what is that? I don't know. Is this something that Eminem is involved with? No. Yeah. But I do rap sometimes about it. I've got a 313 rap. So
I was impressed with that, by the way.
So the idea is that you want to be seen as a full solution. And what I do during the day, I essentially do one of a few things. You know, I'm either developing content, writing. I've got a podcast, The World of Speakers. I've got a radio show called The 313 Show. I'm also a host on the Scale Up Heroes podcast. So three ways where my sharpest tool is being used on an audio format. Then we have courses that we've created at Influence Tree to help people build their brands. And we do consulting with executives. And then we work with corporations to teach them how to create internal influence by giving their employees encouragement to build their own personal brands.
Nice. And then what does that look like? Is that just keynote presentations with the corporations? Is that going in and doing day trainings or multiple day trainings, or like how does it look for?
Yes, yes, and yes. So keynote is a great way to solve the problem for a one to many. Yeah. And then we'll do actual workshops with the executives. And we also have executive clients that hire us to work with them on a one-on-one to help position and create their content. Because The trick to getting paid for your services is to find people that have the money but don't have the time. Mm. And a lot of times we're chasing after people that have the time and don't have the money. And they might really appreciate your information, but they're going to take the time to do it on their own, or they're just not in a position to have somebody else do it for them. And you know, I call it, for myself personally, I've been going through a brandzition, where initially a lot of my target market were entrepreneurs. But I found out and realized that they love the content, but they try to do it on their own and they don't have the money to pay for me. Mm. So I've created sort of a brandzition into working more with an executive crowd and with corporations. But it doesn't mean I'm not creating content that the entrepreneurs can eat and gobble up. Because it's okay to have a community of people that you're sharing information with. And I'm of the belief or the school of thought, whatever information I have, I'm going to give it all away. Like, you go to my site, you can find out everything about the 313. I'm not hiding anything. Mm. But the idea is that if you create enough consistent content where people see you as a thought leader in a certain space, they're going to think that they can do it on their own. You give them all the information and they still have a hard time doing it, and they come back to you at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So I know some people give away just enough information to create interest, but then not enough for it to happen. And for me, I would rather just give it all away. I believe in abundance in that respect.
Yeah. I think it's finding a fine line between that too, not necessarily not wanting to give anything away, or like not giving everything away, but also making sure that, you know, that person out there that you're trying to serve, who you know, may not be able to afford it or whatever, that entrepreneur out there grinding, it's showing them the why more than the how. Because like you're saying with the overteaching, people get confused. You're like, here's everything.
Right.
And they're like, okay, cool. I'm overwhelmed now. I don't know where to start. Whereas, yeah, teasing out that problem, showing that you've got the solution. I mean, it is a fine line. But I think that's the economy that a lot of successful business owners, entrepreneurs, trainers, speakers are all heading in. And let's not keep anything behind closed doors, and then let's work with the people who can afford to work with us and know that we can solve their biggest problem, which is give them more time.
Yeah, one of the things that I find is true more times than not is that people are doing the right things. All of your listeners, the people that are listening right now, they're probably doing exactly what they need to be doing, but there's a good chance they're doing it in the wrong order. And if you think of a sailing analogy, I love to sail. And when I'm out on the water, you're monitoring a compass because that's the direction that you're going. Oftentimes you can't see past the horizon. And if you're 1 or 2 degrees off for 20 to 30 miles, you end up in a completely different location. Now you're doing all the right spots. You're tending to the sails, your boat's afloat, like everything is fine, but you end up in the wrong spot, or you don't even end up on land at all. So I encourage people to see what is it that they're doing now, and are they doing it in the right order? Have you completely locked up your messaging before you go spread your messaging? Do you know the topics that you speak about? Can you defend that before you try to go shop your keynotes? And so I think it's exciting when I can help identify that people are doing the right stuff. But if you just move them around the order or take 2 steps back and make sure your compass course is correct, then you can actually get to where you want to go.
So again, for the speakers out there looking to get into different spaces, what are your biggest tips or your best strategies that have got you in with corporations and things like that? I realize the leading with the problem that you solve, but is it particular people that you're reaching out to? Has it been from the content that you've put out? What have you found to have the most success for you?
So the most success that creates the most amount of inbound leads is what I call validation. And that means that other people are saying that I'm an expert at what I do. And that comes as a process. We talk about it as the 4 V's. It's your vision, figuring out where you want to go. And that has to do with your positioning and your messaging. Then it's about your voice. How are you going to communicate your content? Are you a writer? Are you great with audio? Are you great with video? Are you image-based? Decide that first and then start creating content. The 3rd V is volume. You know, there are people that create amazing content that don't syndicate it all over the place. So once you have your vision set up and you understand your voice and then you create volume with your content, validation is what happens. People start to ask you to be featured in a publication or give an expert quote or, ask you to be on their podcast. And all of those things, we talk about it as success stacking. It just doesn't happen overnight. But when you get one feature, then it leads to another feature and it leads to another feature. And if you Google personal branding experts, beneath the ads, I'm there listed among 10 other people as like the first spot. So people will say personal branding experts to Google. And literally, Google says, these are the guys and girls right here. So that's a long-term play, and that's a result of focusing on a personal brand. So the answer that is the most difficult to achieve, which is the easiest, is that it's when everybody else is referring to you top of mind when it comes to that. Yep. So that's the larger answer. But to reverse engineer, you've got to lock up your vision. You got to know where you want to go. You got to have your voice and know how you want to create the content. Then you got to spread that content in the right channels.
I 100% agree with all of that. And I think a lot of people want the short term, like, what can I do? What's the one thing that I can do that tomorrow will therefore make me an expert, an authority, a top of mind? Businesses will be crawling to, blow up my phone and things like that. And what you got to understand is, it's it's not that your skill set's necessarily going to change in what you teach, but it's a longer game, and you know, you've just got to be consistent and perseverant and keep adding value and doing all those things that you just mentioned, which are super handy. So I'd recommend everyone goes back to those. Again, one more for the speakers out there. Like I've spoken in at a TEDx conference as well. You have what, three or four, is it?
Four so far.
I know people who have, yeah, they've chucked it on their bucket list. They've, you know, begged, pleaded to try to get into events. What's your secret?
Well, I've got plenty of them. There's three Inc. articles that are out there that cover a step-by-step process before you think about applying, the application process, and even after that. Then when it comes to creating a talk, I have a post out there, which is 30 steps of creating a killer talk, right? And that's once you're on stage. But here's the down and dirty if you're listening and you want to check off that bucket list, because it's possible. Number one, where did you go to college? Figure out if your college has a TEDx organization. If they do, reach out to them and say, hey, I'm an alumni. I see that you have a TEDx organization. I would love to come back and share my amazing story and my amazing idea. That is probably the closest, lowest hanging fruit. Mm. Secondly, it is okay to apply for the talk. So many people think that somebody else has to nominate them. That's just a misconception. When you are applying for a talk, it's very important that you apply early. And if you reverse engineer most of the events, at least on in general, they'll have like one big signature event during the year. It's like a big spring event. They might have salon events. So find out when that is. And usually you will learn about the event when it's too late. Mm. So if you see the event, it's probably too late. But then mark a calendar for 6 months beforehand and then actually look for the call for speakers. Because oftentimes they're so impacted, it's not like they're out there broadcasting, like, hey, apply, apply. They're like so many people that they have to deal with. It's kind of internal. And what you do then is you contact the organizer if it's not a call for speakers and say, hey, I loved your event last year. I wasn't able to make it, but I followed you guys online. I've got an idea that I think is great. Let me know when your theme comes out, and I'd love to apply. Just like anything, the first few applications probably get more weight than the others. And a lot of the organizers are going to say, we're not going to look at any applications until they're all in. I don't think that's true, because the earlier that you apply, the better chances that you have for it. Now, it's also important to understand that events that are in your town are really looking for a majority of people that are somewhat affiliated with their organization or in a small local area. And then there's always an opportunity for one or two outsiders. Hmm. So if you live in a certain area, you might have better luck being the outsider in a state far away. Okay. So most TEDx's will have one or two spots earmarked for somebody to come out of town. If you're looking at a sort of holistic spot, you either apply for it or they come and ask you to do it. And my first TEDx that I got at TEDx UNLV, the talk is called How to Not Get Chased by a Bear, if you want to know that. I applied 12 different times over a series of like 2 years before I got my first bite. Like 12 times. Like that's a lot of applications, and people don't realize that. But then I got my first one on the map. This is how you success stack. And then I was able to promote that accordingly. And then I got asked to do my second talk. And then I got asked to do my third talk. And then I was searching and I saw an ad, a call for speakers for TEDx Quincy that was Big Ideas in Little America. And I had this burning idea. I'm like, oh my gosh, that is so on point for my theme. So I reached out to them and the application was closed. But that didn't stop me. I found out who the organizer was. I researched them on LinkedIn. I got in touch with them and I pitched them on LinkedIn in a private message. And then they opened up the application. I was able to submit. I was head to head with 20 other people that made the second round because I was in late and I got the spot. So in a general sense, check with your alma mater. That's a good, easy first bet. Get on the radar of where and when these events are, and then reverse engineer when the applications would be due and get a call for speakers in there early. oftentimes will ask for video. It's all about being yourself on the video, not highly produced, but just bringing your energy to it. Mm. And what encompasses all this is that just like any event, people want people in seats. They want to be able to fill the house. They got to cover their costs. And if you have a large social following and you have an engaged community and you can bring that to the table at the same time, it only helps, which goes back to the personal brand. Mm. And being on the red carpet is a great brand builder because it still baffles me, but a lot of people don't know the difference between TED and TEDx. The brand halo is so strong. Like, I have not given a TED talk yet. I've given 4 TEDx talks, but the brand halo is strong because people just assume and associate you with everybody else that's on the stage. We actually have a course that we've created called the TED Effect, and you can check it out at grow.influencetree.com. And we not only give away all of our insights and how I've been able to get on the stage and get others on the stage, but we've created a database of like 400 to 500 TEDx organizations and their websites and their contacts, because half the battle is knowing where they are. So yes, it's a bucket list, but follow those simple somewhat steps and just keep applying. People just don't apply, right? I want to do it. Well, I'll ask people, you want to get on the TEDx stage? Great. When was the last time you applied for it? Huh? Well, I did, but it didn't go in. So you applied one time. Just one time? Really? That's it? Okay. Well, I know exactly why you're not there. But again, if you want more reference, because I can't speak too long on it, if you go to ryanfolan.com under media, there's 3 Inc. articles that cover before, during, and after. Because guess what? If you don't get chosen and you just blow it off, that's the wrong move. Still stay engaged. If you can go to the event, go to the event. If you can support them on social media, support them on social media. At the end of the day, whether it's a TEDx stage or it's a keynote at a conference or at a major social media marketing event or something like that, it's all relationships at the end of the day. You're either building a relationship, you're maintaining a relationship, or you're accelerating the relationship. And the organizers of these TEDx events, like, I'm friends with them. I have a relationship. And so now I'm able to help introduce other people who I think would be great for their stage. So again, always think of things in a non-selfish way. Like, what can you give, and then you can ask. Yeah. So it's doable and it is exciting. It's a fun platform, short form. It's a great stage to spread ideas.
Yeah. I love the non-bias approach. Like, there's no ulterior motive. When people are on stage, obviously people like to build their brand.
And, yeah, you're not getting sold, basically. Yeah.
And I mean, it's just such a wide variety. It was funny when you were saying a lot of those points, I was just like, tick, tick, tick in my head on the thing. And it's a genuine hustle. Like,
yeah,
it's not going to fall upon your lap unless you're one of the biggest names in the world getting invited to a TED talk.
Because yeah,
you're Richard Branson or you're Tim Ferriss or you're so-and-so. Like, none of those, like, if you have it on your bucket list, which I literally put it on my bucket list at the start of last year, and then August had ticked it off, and yeah, it was an awesome experience, and yeah, you learn a lot from it. But yeah, I think I again wholeheartedly agree, and I really, really love the insights that you've given to people who are wanting to take their, you know, a lot of speakers that I come across that I train, they go, I want to, you know, start taking my message and, you know, helping people in schools or in companies, or I want to give a TEDx talk. And you've given some very practical ways, and we'll link everything to your sites in the show notes. At publicspeakingsecrets.com. But publicspeakingblueprint.com. But I want to welcome you to Speaker Nation and just thank you so much for your time. If people do want to check out more about you, more about what you're up to, the everybody in the 313 and its method that goes along with it, where can they go and what can they do?
Yeah, so you can go to ryanfolan.com or just Google Ryan Folan, and all my TEDx's come up there. And if you are really interested in upping your speaking game, then go to worldofspeakers.com. Subscribe to it. We have over 50 episodes. I just love meeting people and I love learning. So I basically find amazing people. I'm doing something very similar to what you're doing, is just helping my audience to learn. And I ask them who they are, what their tips are, and how they get onto stages. And it's amazing. I'm always learning and I'm humbled by the amount of advice that I get. But at the same time, everybody listening is getting it too. So check out worldofspeakers.com And again, just start to think of everything as a series of dots. My last question to you, how many dots does it take to make a line? This is geometry.
Two,
exactly, right? So think of every relationship that you have, the processes that you start as a series of dots. And it's you have to connect the dots to create a line. A lot of people will say, send one application. That's a dot. But that doesn't go anywhere. If we have this one conversation, that's a dot. But if we don't follow up afterwards or find a reason to connect afterwards or continue to communicate, it's just a dot. And so if you think of life as a series of dots, that you have to create the next dot in order for there to be a line. That's the way that I approach my speaking. That's the way that I get on stages. Every single chance I have, I'm trying to connect dots. And you start with a dot. So everybody's at the same spot. So this is a dot for you. Go out there and send out an application. That's another dot. Build a relationship with somebody who's in that organization. That's another dot. Follow you and what you've done. There's another dot. So just connect the dots. And if you're not finding traction, there's a good chance that you're just sort of one and dunning, or you're not finding the right way to connect those dots.
If you're not creating traction, you're not taking action. That is a ton of brilliant advice. And yeah, I challenge all of you out there listening at the moment and Speaker Nation to go out and create those dots. Start today. Do it right now when you're watching. So, like, pause this right
and
now.
If I can say one more thing, because I know we're out of time, but this gets back to the action. Successful speakers are not successful because they're doing things that everybody else cannot do. Successful speakers are doing what everyone can do, but not everyone does. And that means sitting in a chair and writing a blog, going out and speaking for free if you need to, and connecting these dots. So it's there. Stop looking for the hacks and start doing the work. That's what I got to say. You got it.
Yeah. Thank you, my friend. And I look forward to keeping these dots being connected off this podcast and supporting and helping each other grow.
For sure, buddy. Let's share the stage sometime. Let's make it happen.
Thanks.
If you want to fast track your confidence and impact with public speaking, then be sure to jump over to publicspeakingblueprint.com, where there's an array of free resources to help you no matter where you are on your journey to becoming a more powerful speaker. And while you're at it, jump over to Facebook and join our free community called Speaker Nation, where there's a ton of other like-minded individuals just like yourself looking to level up. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss next week's episode.